podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Friday show. It is hosted by Neil Atkinson. With me, I've got Mike Kearney, I've got Jake Nolan, and I've got Paul Dehaney. Coming, we've also got Gito Llewellyn and Dan Gray to talk about relevant FA Cup third round action and opportunities. But we'll start off with the madness of the Cup, Mike, and COVID offers a whole new element to the madness of the Cup. There's unpredictability of fixtures going ahead. Unpredictability of selections, unpredictability of managers able to attend seemingly. There's also the idea that some sides haven't played for ages, so fitness could be weird. They could go stronger than normal. There's also a big gap the other side, weirdly, because of how the calendars fell for a lot of teams in both top divisions, which they normally don't get the luxury of. It's a third round that, frankly, the only thing it could do with is a couple more absolute fixtures that feel as though the belt is. Apart from that, it's got all the other madness that you need, whether we like it or not.
It's essentially where everyone thinks, all right, now this is actually happening again. Like, all of a sudden, it's just, there's a pause in everyone's league calendar. Everyone thinks, oh, we've got one game postponed, we'll fit that in somewhere. But now it's a cup competition where all the leagues combined, and everyone's like, oh shit, this is weird now. And then you've got, as you said, the unpredictability of games are on at the minute, but they might be off later as we record. Might be off on the day of the game. We just don't know. And I think the FA probably thought that, well, they'll do the thing they've done with the replays to leave a little bit of a spare week, sort of a week, 10 days after, accounting for COVID a little bit. But then you just don't know. I think what we'll end up talking about is Man City is still on at the moment as we speak, isn't it? And it probably will get played. You imagine we'll do our best to get our game played, because it's just ultimately got to be done. Otherwise, it's a scheduling nightmare for everyone.
They kept the third round replay. They've got rid of the third round replays, but they've done everything they can that I can see to keep the third round replay week free, insofar as humanly possible so far. And I think that's with an eye on, that's where the postponements are going to go. It's a 10-day gap between one or the other, so there should be within, they'd be very unlucky, for instance, if one side had an outbreak, wasn't able to fulfil the fixture, and then 10 days later, another side had a similar outbreak and was now unable to fulfil the fixture. Like, a 10-day gap that there normally is between FA Cup games is, you know, at the minute we're now told that 7 days people can test. So that's why they've clearly kept that gap, is because the idea is, right, if they can't play then, they'll play the third round, replay week, we'll just get them all done one way or the other, and that appears to be what they're hanging the hat on.
Yeah, it's nice to know that there's some sort of logic there really going on in football, but I think maybe it'd be good if they were transparent about that as well, because I think us as fans need to kind of know what's going on a little bit more. But I've got to be honest with you though, Neil, kind of the devil in me is enjoying the madness of it all a little bit. Like, we just come in here and we were sparking debate before we started about, you know, what is going to happen, what's going to happen, and I'm really into Liverpool playing the 6-year-olds on Sunday.
I mean, we'll get onto that with Liverpool and with Tottenham, Paul, over the course of the show. There are so many games that just need to get played for the competition to be fulfilled. They've got to happen somewhere. I'm talking later on to Gito Llewellyn, where in a situation where Swansea haven't played a game since December the 11th. So for them, the cup game that they've got coming up against Southampton becomes a de facto friendly, almost like a pre-season friendly, get the players back. But what that means is, at times in the past, Swansea have rested players for the cup. You know, other teams have rested players for the cup. You're more used to seeing young players. But if teams haven't got a game for a week after this and haven't had a game for X number of days before it, I think you will actually see some stronger sides than we normally get.
Perhaps, but I also think that, you know, Man City, for instance, their game at Swindon, we were talking before, I think they would have played the pretty much kids side anyway. So I think the COVID outbreak, if they were playing a Premier League game, I'm not sure whether that game would be going ahead tomorrow. So I think there'll be some concession with the FA Cup. And I also think that if the games don't get played in that period, I think there'll be some forfeits as well. We had a situation in the League Cup last year against Leyton Orient where it was a COVID outbreak on their part, and they couldn't fulfil the fixture because Tottenham had a number of fixtures lined up, and Leyton Orient had to forfeit the game. And the same thing happened to us in Europe. If you see, it's a similar situation. They give you a deadline in cup competitions. If you can't fulfil that game, then you have to forfeit the game 3-0. And that's what happened to us in Europe. So I think in cup competitions, there's a lot more, we just got to get on with this. Whereas in the Premier League, I think the money and, you know, the TV, everything that goes around it kind of dictates that, you know, the rules are a little bit different.
On the forfeits point, Paul, I think, and maybe we'll be could even be proven different by the time this show finishes or by the time this show goes out, I do think they will have the attitude of, we'll try and give you the replay week. But if then if it can't happen, then there's got to be consequences. There's got to be, and I think that that's where there's going to be, that's where I think it is going to get tense around whether or not we get every tie played. Not necessarily every game played this weekend, but every tie completed is going to be, if they feel as though, you know, if the same team is unable, says they're unable to fulfill a fixture for a second time, then I think there's every chance they say, well, then the fixture doesn't go ahead and your opponents, they're into the hat and you're not.
Yeah, and you've got to take into account that as well as Premier League backlogs. I mean, I think we've got some, like, two or three games in hand in the Premier League on some people. You've got Europe coming around again soon. You've got internationals going to start before long. Where are you going to fit these fixtures in? I think that they are going to be pretty ruthless, and there's no way they get, you know, cup dates are pretty much held, aren't they, throughout the calendar for periods. Yeah. So I don't think they're going to be changing, you know, the fourth round to 2 weeks later because of the backlog of fixtures. It's not like the old days where we had the FA Cup basically and the Football League, and you could have, remember when we used to have replays where you'd have like three or four replays before a game can be completed, and it used to go on forever. Not anymore.
Okay, beginning to move through the fixtures then, coming up, we have got, as I said before, Guido Clywellyn, but we've also got Dan Gray, who's talking about the game between Mansfield and Middlesbrough that takes place on Saturday morning. And here is Dan.
Joined by Dan Gray to talk about a resurgent Middlesbrough. It's suddenly some run, and it's a run the like of which very few sides actually get on over the course of the season. And when you are in the Championship, it's a run that can really mean a thing or two. We're looking at a side here who in this at times COVID hit season, I've got to go all the way back to the 2nd of November, the last time they got beat. The 23rd of November, the last time they got beat against Preston. But since then, wins against Huddersfield, against Swansea, a draw against Stoke, and then a win against Bournemouth, win against Nottingham Forest, and a win against Blackpool's propelled them up the table. Is this the effect of Wilder, or is there more to this? Is there less to this? Is it just coincidence?
It's Wilder, absolutely. It's the manner of the way they've played as well. Each game they've got better. You know, well, the last one was a bit scrappy, and we knew there was a scrappy one coming when we won at Blackpool, but the games before that, each one they'd got better in them, and it's just suddenly fantastic to watch. It's the final third, the stuff they're playing up front, the really quick football, but they're not conceding goals either. That last 92nd minute Blackpool goal was the first one we'd let in a long while, but it's not based on rigorous defensive football by any stretch. I've not known a manager change us around this quickly the whole time I've been going. It's quite something. It's the Wilder effect, absolutely.
Has he imposed his style of play as we sort of know it now from when he was in the Premier League with Sheffield United, with that back three, with centre-halves moving around, really interchangeable movement between the centre midfielders and the wing-backs, filling the box at times
it's,
as well?
It's getting there. I mean, the great cliche is the overlapping centre-halves, and you're never going to get that out of Sol Bamba, brilliant as he is, and already a cult hero after just a dozen games or so. But you can get it out of Dale Fry. Someone needs to make Dale Fry the footballer he can be. Hopefully he'll stay with Borough, but Fry is good enough to play even for you maybe at some stage. But and so Dale Fry can play to that system, and a lot of them can. You know, he's got the best out of Tavernier and some of the other local lads like that. So it is slowly but sure. You know, I don't say we'll go up or even maintain the playoff thing, but just to have a long-term vision for the first time in a while after when Warnock did a great job in stabilising and gave us some good times in the COVID season especially. But Pulis, all these short-term managers, this feels like a proper motif going right through the club. It just feels exciting for the first time in a good while.
You say you don't want to talk about sort of sustaining it even around the playoffs. It's a difficult league at the minute to do a rational assessment of, because of the COVID influence in terms of where squads are in and of themselves, also in terms of where, you know, games are. There's huge disparity in terms of the number of games played, but it's hard to avoid the conclusion that Middlesbrough are 10 points behind top with having played the same number of games, that they find themselves, you know, all of a sudden 5 points clear, say, of a Nottingham Forest team that felt as though it was on a bit of a march at one point, and maybe you'll find itself again with the same number of games played. It's only 1 point off the playoff places with a game in hand on the side that are in sixth. You don't want to get ahead of yourself, but this, it doesn't even need to necessarily sustain at this level for it to become a playoff push.
No, and I say I'm not getting ahead of myself, but me and my friend were sending London Premier Inns for the playoff weekend in May to each other the other night on WhatsApp. So I'm trying not to curse it, but I suppose the romantic dream now is to play Tony Mowbray's Blackburn in the playoff final. That would be quite something. Mogga led us out at our first Wembley appearance, 25th of March 1990, though he wasn't playing, the injured captain. And so that might be the storyline that you come back to me on, perhaps. But yeah, I'm what's the point in going if you don't get carried away, Neil? Of course I'm carried away. I've got my season ticket back. I missed one game because I had COVID, and it's just brilliant to be back there watching this brand of football. Yeah, I'm carried away. We're going up in the playoffs. Screw it.
I mean, you're saying in the playoffs, and I don't want to be responsible for getting you even more carried away, but the very strange thing about this league as it is at the minute is often by this stage, someone is running away. There was a period I felt about sort of 6 weeks ago, just keeping an eye on the Championship, and I thought that's just going to end up being Bournemouth and Fulham by about 10-15 points to third. It's just going to be Bournemouth and Fulham. And that, Bournemouth and Fulham now sit in third. They have got games in hand, but they've come back to the pack, both of those sides. And, you know, what I mean here is that it could end up a bit of a bun fight, that, couldn't it, between sort of six or seven sides at the top?
Yeah, I'm amazed they've fallen over. But when Bournemouth came to Borough the other week and we matched them and then outplayed them, I know they'll say they had an off day and all. It's one of those great moments where you go, they're not, just because they've come down and they've got money, it's still football, we can still do this. And it was one of those watersheds you need in every season, I think.
And you know, earlier in the, just before the, I think it was Warnock's last game, there's a draw against West Brom in there as well. The gap is tighter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I don't know whether you call it a lesser season or not. To me, it's a better season because it's so competitive. We've often said on this podcast about how much interest there is in the Championship, and it definitely feels like that this year. Even the subplots of things like Rooney's Derby being finding form despite being pretty much dead men, well, at the same time Steve Gibson suing Derby. It's got the usual subplot, Championship subplots, and it's lovely to feel like this again. I didn't for the first few games, I didn't care how we played, what the result was. We were just back in the ground. I think a lot of us felt like that. But now it's becoming a bit serious. You're thinking, yeah, this is back on now and we're back here and let's get the ground full, because it was nearly full for the Boxing Day. And that's one thing. We have about 10,000 at least missing fans that we need to re-find and keep in the ground. That's a different matter.
It is a different matter. It's not one for this weekend either, because you're away at Mansfield. But what hits me is, I think it could be a bit of a strange third round weekend in the past. I think a couple of things have happened here. I think it's in part the way the calendar plays a part, because ultimately Saturday the 1st, Saturday the 8th and Saturday the 15th have all been kept. There's no midweek games in those gaps to drop in for the EFL sides. Similarly, you didn't play the game you were meant to play on the 1st against Sheffield United. So he's got 7 days the other side of this one against Mansfield. We've talked in the past, me and you, Dan, and I've talked a lot on these shows that, you know, it's under-discussed how much sides towards the top of the Championship often rest for the third round of the FA Cup. But there's no reason, I would actually argue the opposite. It would be unreasonable to rest these footballers in this game coming up against Mansfield. It's a first 11 game, surely.
It is, but then I don't know where they are with the COVID isolation and things, like if they were... Where is it, your positive test and all of that? Is it 7-8 days in training? And I suppose one topic you're probably talking about in the podcast is that phrase, the magic of the cup. And actually, to me, that there's a new, you have to take new delights, new magics of the cup, if you like. And one of them is actually seeing younger players quite often for me. Now, I used to really bemoan it and get annoyed about it, but it's become part of the third round process. I would rather we went for every cup. I have got such wonderful memories of our cup runs down the years. But at the same time, there is a certain excitement about getting to see the young player. So I wouldn't be too heartbroken if he doesn't go for it, because there's a crop that just aren't really getting a chance at the minute that would be good to see.
Given the sort of character he is and was at his best at Sheffield United, I think he did begin to lose his way a little bit, and there was a lot of him just finding it a little bit difficult, I think, both on and off the pitch. You get the impression, dealing with the sort of the management there, the ownership there as well, as much as anything else. But given the sort of character he is, I think, you know, over the course of what could become a cup run, because let's be honest, you should be beating Mansfield away. So what could become a bit of a cup run could be an interesting little way to maybe test some of these players out a little bit, in a way that, you know, he, he will see himself as a Premier League manager. He'll want to be managing back in the Premier League. He'll think he can do it with Middlesbrough with Chris Wilder. I think that, you know, Middlesbrough might, you know, you're only one more kind draw away from maybe getting a Premier League team at home in the fifth round, and it all feeling very real.
Yeah, yeah, and they're brilliant days now as well when we get to have a big proper crowd in for things like that. So I think you're right. I think he'll try and get through it with youngsters with a good bench is how I imagine it. It'd be good to be against Nigel Clough. We have our own link through his dad having a statue in the main park in town, obviously. And I've just always admired the way Nigel Clough, like the way he used to pass beautifully sideways, has just gone sideways between clubs in the Midlands. He obviously really loves his house. just waits till a Midlands job comes up. There's a lot to be said for that, isn't there? In an era of vaulting ambition, I just like me house and a pint of Marston's.
I know the restaurants. I haven't got a mess about.
Yeah, exactly.
He has the same thing every time he goes for an Indian.
Yeah. Lovely fella, Nigel. Lovely fella, yeah.
Are you going to beat the Mansfield?
I think so, yeah, without the usual bigger team arrogance that I can't imagine this manager settling for anything else, anything below par, and if it is youngsters, I think they'll really go for it. I'm hoping to see Callum Kavanagh, who scored a hat-trick against your under-18s a few weeks back. I'm hoping to see him get a game because I used to watch his dad playing for Borough, which is always one of those awful landmarks in your life, but still a lovely thing.
Great stuff from Dan there. Before that game, there is the Manchester City one, Mike. There's probably a Liverpool, from a Liverpool point of view, you know, there's nothing wrong with City having a degree of a fixture pile-up. I think it's one of the things that's marked actually out City's slightly serene progress in recent weeks was that they didn't have the Carabao Cup game, and nor is the one on the horizon. They actually got themselves a week's training in before Christmas, which a lot of other sides weren't able to, whether it's for COVID reasons or whether or not it's simply for not having had a fixture in there because they'd gone out earlier on within the Carabao Cup. We could probably do with City's serene progress we've seen in the Cups at least continuing, so there's at least the idea that they might end up with a slightly hectic schedule at some point.
Yeah, if anything, just for, I think what you're getting at basically is, so the recovery periods between games is just not there for them. As we always hear big managers, don't we, talking about we don't really train before games. When we get into the busy parts, we only recover. And then we have, Klopp always calls it a minus one day, doesn't he? Where it's like, here's the plan, here's the shape, there you go, go and do it sort of thing. And, you know, they're so used to doing it might really be a negative, but if it can be a negative, then from our point of view and a selfish point of view, absolutely let them get through. I mean, to put my tongue firmly in my cheek, I don't think they'd get a tough draw anyway. It always seems to be the way, doesn't it, Swindon?
I know,
but and it's just nicer than to have another fixture in the calendar and to tell us all about how they're struggling when, you know, they've got not the deepest squad, but certainly probably the deepest quality.
Yeah,
squad knocking around in the country. So, look, I've got no sympathy for them. They'll probably get through, and I won't have any sympathy for them with the fixture pile up. If anything, I think it's probably not going to be that much testing, is it? And it all depends on the draw on the other side of it. If it comes out and it's a heavier draw than they'd like, you probably start to hear a bit more complaints about the fixture pile up, won't you? Versus a more comfortable draw.
They up against side that are sort of sitting in League Two, but a side that's sitting fifth in League Two, Paul. I always feel when you are looking down the leagues and listen, there'll be lots of evidence that can prove me wrong, but I always feel a little bit as though a side that's just at least shown it knows a bit how to win is more likely to find its way through any given game. You know, one that's struggled a bit, but at least knows where the back of the net is, at least knows what winning feels like. When you look at your likely sort of cup upsets, and that's a little bit of something that you're looking for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for all the things we mentioned earlier about Man City, they could be naming a very young squad, very young team. And as we've seen in sort of like, I think it's the EFL Trophy, where they play under 21 teams, you know, two, believe it or not, have kind of got through to the latter stages, I think Chelsea and Arsenal this year. But normally, that even though the players are skillful, the younger players, the physicality of the lower league players, they tend to bully them, and that's where you can get a result. From a selfish point of view, you know, I know you guys look at it from a Liverpool, but from a Spurs point of view, I'd rather City get knocked out because,
yeah,
just like in the League Cup, I think that it almost opened up for teams like Arsenal and Spurs in the League Cup. Obviously, we're 2-0 down for the first leg, so that doesn't look like it now. But, you know, with Man City not being there, it makes you know, it's a, there's a lot less trepidation moving forward, knowing that you don't have to play City in the final and lose, you know, and not have a shot on goal. So, like, hopefully, you know, I'm hoping that Swindon can do us all a favour and can get rid.
You'd end up, Jake, sort of looking at it. We've seen, I mean, literally against our opponents that we've got coming up at the weekend, you know, it was a very young Liverpool side that went up against Shrewsbury a couple of years ago, albeit at Anfield, and albeit I think that it was a Shrewsbury side that sort of lost its way and lost its head a little bit. I had an interesting chat to someone on Team Talk about this, that the idea of it being an absolute youth side and a bit of a rabbit in a headlights one sort of confused Shrewsbury in the end, and then it found confidence and Shrewsbury lost theirs. At least Swindon know they're going to have a bit of an odd Manchester City. I mean, up to and including they're not even getting Guardiola in the ground.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think from the top end of the business, you know, we kind of say, don't we, oh, the magic of the FA Cup's gone, and it kind of feels like it gets in the way at times and whatnot. But you got to remember, for these clubs, it's a big deal, and they'll be right up for it. And very much on that notion. I'm just having a quick Google about Swindon there to see what's going on in that world, because I've got to say, my football knowledge doesn't spread that far. And it just said 10 arrested after clash with Bradford, so that just shows you exactly how much they'll be up for it, I suppose, depending on what you look at that. But I was reading as well about City, so all their backroom staff are down, so who's going to do their line? Is it Liam Gallagher or Noel? Yeah, but not quite sure what's going to happen there. But yeah, like you said, I think it's a big clash for Swindon, so shall we maybe throw a little bit of pinch of salt in there?
Yeah, indeed. Moving on to the games that there are on Saturday, the 3 PMs that stand out in particular. In a strange way, normally for sides at the bottom of the table, Paul, I feel like the one thing they could do without a cup run. But I think Newcastle, for the project, whatever that may be, in inverted commas, they need to have some good news that's beyond we're just staying up. You know, in a really weird way, they could sort of do with a cup run. So I think that they may well go as strong as they possibly can up against, they've got a week after the game as well, they may go as strong as they can up against the Cambridge United side, because they sort of need to. They need to just not look like the job is just to suffer and then get some glory lads in.
Yeah, I mean, they've started the revolution, obviously. It reminds me a little bit, I think they're going to kind of go the same way as City, in the sense that it's not going to be a crazy, quick, mad revolution. It's almost going to be the way City were again with Mark Hughes, and they bought like almost like decent Premier League players and then sort of built up over a number of years. But the key to that, obviously, is trying to stay in the Premier League. So, yes, they'd like to build confidence, I'm sure, in the FA Cup, but is that going to be a distraction moving forward when their focus has got to be staying in the Premier League, really, for this project not to be set back, because they'll almost be starting at minus one if they get relegated this season. They're in the Championship for another season, so it just puts the project back further. So I think, you know, they're focus. I'm not. Where is this? Is it at St James's Park? Yeah. I mean, and how are Cambridge doing?
They are mid-table in League Two, so they're not a good side. In League One, they're a League One side that sits about sort of 15th, 16th.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be game, and it'll be one of those where I've seen these before, where that if the Premier League team doesn't score, you know, they could nick a draw there, you know, and take them back.
Got Wes Hoolahan, which I think counts double. Wes is count double.
42-year-old Wes Hoolahan.
You know, you've seen that in the past where ex-Premier League players have come back to sort of haunt current Premier League, almost like trying to show, look, I've still got the quality, you know. Yeah. So you never know. You'd think Newcastle would go through over the piece, though.
You would. One I think is really interesting, Jake, is West Brom versus Brighton, where I feel like Brighton are in, and I often say this of teams like Brighton at this stage of the season, and I'm proven completely wrong. But every year I'll come back and do it again, and every year I'll feel like I should be right. If you are Brighton, what is the purpose of this season if you're not committing all your energy towards the FA Cup? There is no way on earth you're going to go down. You're not going to finish top seven for a Europa League / even Europa Conference place. Genuinely, I don't understand why, if I was running Brighton, I would make winning the FA. I would sit Graham Potter down a couple of weeks ago and say, our top priority from now to the end of the season is a stronger cup run as we possibly can, Graham. Let's see how we can do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the club needs a bit of history as well, doesn't it? You need, the fans need a story to go along.
Because these are the good times. They need to feel like, because these are the good times. They should feel like that. And if there could be a piece of silverware or even just a semi-final, you'd at least remember the day you got to go to Wembley.
Yeah, exactly. And I've said before, I'm almost a little bit perverse when it comes to Brighton. I really like them, and I don't know exactly why. I think it's his beard. But yeah, I think exactly. And the fans need something to get behind. You know, they were booing after the 0-0 draw, and he gave it the question marks, quite rightly so, isn't it? But that's probably because they don't know exactly what they're trying to support. Yeah. And I know we're going to go on to talk about Wigan, but if you think about them a few years ago, obviously they get relegated, but they've got the history of the FA Cup win now. And now I think pretty much think that when if you go to Wigan Stadium now, that's still what's plastered everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the memory in every fans sort of lie. That's what they're going to be telling the sons, the granddaughters, whoever about. It's not about, you know, when we finish sort of 14th. So I still think that counts. You know, it's none of our business, but it's clubs like that business.
Decent ninth, Brighton, Mike, and it will be, if they finish ninth, and there's no reason to suspect they couldn't, looking at who's below them, maybe Leicester could come with a bit of a run, looking at who's above them, maybe Wolves, they might just sort of nick in ahead of. But it'd be the best finish, I think, possibly in the history of the club, in terms of a league table. One of the best, if not the best. There's a period of time, a few, about back in the 70s, where I think that they managed to finish around mid-table.
And the 80s when they got to the FA Cup final,
And they got to the final. But that's what my point was going to be. People remember them getting to the FA Cup final. They don't remember them trundling along in 12th in the old Division 1. And that's, you know, I'll say it again, that it should surely be, how do we get the most out of this season when we feel like we could go? We can go to Anfield and get a result. We can go to Stamford Bridge and get a result. Well, the thing to do then is try and win the FA Cup.
And you'd think that would be the policy from top down, that the owner at Brighton is quite a smart fella, isn't he? Involved, and you know, surely a cup win will further enhance the steadiness of their club in terms of bringing new fans in, as well as making the younger ones at the moment, like, get more invested, stay. Proper get hooked into Premier League football, winning trophy. Next year's a European adventure. Then if you go and do the FA Cup, and for a club like Brighton, you know, they'll have progression steps, and somewhere along the line they'll want to get into Europe. And you know, if you can win a pot and put yourself in there, then all the best. Like it's probably one of the best ways of getting into Europe, isn't it? For a team like that, even when we look back at the League Cup win in 2012 after not winning a lot for a period, and that was 6 years to the FA Cup that Rafa Benitez won us, and it was a penalty shootout against Cardiff, but it was a day out. It was a cup that we lifted at the end of it. It was a feeling of progression, of success, hopefully breeding success, which is what clubs like Brighton will do. Newcastle mentioned before, you know, they haven't won nothing for absolute donkeys, Newcastle. We're going to talk about our lovely neighbours as well. You know, they're
their own thing, Michael. We'll come on to them as a separate segment.
I had to mention now and again, but winning things is what we're in it for, isn't it? And you know, not just us, by the way, teams like Brighton and then teams further down as well, they all dream about winning things and watching your football team win things. So surely the club will be really interested in keeping security and pushing on to the future.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs always get levelled with, you know, they haven't won a trophy since 2008 or whatever it was. You know, I look and I thought to myself, let's just look through that Premier League table and let's see who won what, when, or last lot. So I took out, taken out Liverpool, Arsenal, Man United, City, and Chelsea, right? So take out them five clubs, right? And you go through the list, and you're looking at Everton, 90s, Newcastle,
50s,
never, practically, you know, West Ham, 80s, and you go through it. It's not as, you know, like, it's been pretty slim pickings through the Premier League years. Mm-hmm. And the other ironic thing I saw the other day was the Premier League was set up in, 1992, and the only teams in the Premier League that have been ever present are the founding members. I don't know if there's anything, sinister in that. they can never go down or anything, but yeah, it's just, I don't know if it's coincidence, but
Evan, I'm having a go, Paul.
But yeah, going back to the FA Cup, I think that there are teams, and Brighton come into that, and we do, obviously, and we do have a go. You know, we, it's not like we've had, I think we've lost 8 semi-finals in a row. It might even be 9 right? So we do want to win it, but we just don't seem to
give Marine a good game.
Sorry?
Give Marine a good game last season.
I'm actually on the Marine Hall of Fame for buying the ticket for that, actually. Okay. I haven't gone to look at it yet. I called it Memorial the other day, and I don't think that's the right words, is it?
No, I don't think it is. No. Not unless there's a lot we don't know about.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about.
I mean, anytime you want to fence down to Marine Pool, give me a shout, go for a pint. There is the other one I've pointed out, Mike, Wigan versus Blackburn Rovers in there. And that's a weird sort of, firstly, it's a derby. But the second thing about it is it's a weird sort of game where Blackburn are away, Wigan are at home, Wigan are now a League One team. Both are in the playoff places in the relevant divisions. Insofar as, you know, as I say, the reason why this gets my attention is this is the one of the very few examples where I think it is actually perfectly reasonable for both sides to be thinking, could do without this, you know.
See, I think that, but with Blackburn, you can take it a lot into what you're reading there about they've just sent Leighton Clarkson back to Liverpool. It was mutually agreed upon. And that was mainly down to a fact that he wasn't really getting a chance because they're settled and doing really well. But Tony Mowbray was very, you know, very, very effusive in his praise of the player. He was saying he's brilliant. He deserves the chance to go and play. You know, he's great in training, great on the ball. And he was very, very, you know, as I said, he was really getting into the praise of him. And you think if he was thinking about hanging on and rotating a little bit, maybe he would have kept Clarkson to play him. Maybe he thought, right, we'll see how you go in January. But he might be keeping one eye on this to keep going, really roll the momentum on. As I said, it's a League One team versus a Championship team. You know, they want to see where it all falls into place for you, won't they, for the next round and so on. And if it is a chance to go and keep this momentum going for them, and for Wigan as well, probably, by the way, as you said, up and around the League One playoff places, you know, it's a free hit essentially for both teams, isn't it? They go on and they get the bounce and they can go into the next round and they can all start dreaming of Wembley, or, you know, they get the weekends free and they can have a rest now and again and maybe even bring a couple of fixtures into place where the FA Cup game could and should have been for whatever they are in the COVID hold back, because I will imagine that, you know, down the leagues in the EFL, there's a lot more.
There's loads. There's a lot. Such disparity in the number of games teams have played. It's hysterical.
Mm-hmm. I think I was looking at the Championship league table before, and I think it's only a little snapshot. But someone's on 27, someone's on 23. You know, so I would imagine somewhere on the line, someone's in the mid 20s, and someone's not even on 20 at some point. It's wild how it's going to be working itself out through the rest of the season. But for teams like Wigan and Blackburn, there you've basically got a lovely little free hit there.
Bit of a derby match as well, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to be on fire, I think. You know, you've got to think the town that day. Be absolute fire. Probably hasn't seen a party like that since about 1992. Yeah.
Does Will Griggs still play? I don't think he does.
Because he just said they're on
they've
fire.
I think they've got a load of scousers, haven't they? As Perth, if I remember right, Max Power still play for them, I think.
Yeah.
Carragher's lad's there as well, isn't he? Is he getting the game now?
We signed a good lad from the Alfie Devine,
Yeah. I think the kind of... Although they haven't seen the height of the Premier League, from what I was seeing, especially when Cookie and that was there, they've always still tried to play good footy from when, like, Martinez was there and whatnot. And, you know, there is a human element to it in terms of...
They said they've got three games in hand on Rotherham, who are top, Wigan. So they've got three, and they're 5 points behind, so they've got three games in hand. They've played 21, won 14 over the course of the season, only lost four. Rotherham have played 24, won 15, but they've only lost four. A couple more draws in there for them. This is a Wigan side that, I'll say it again, and this is why, if they chose not to go for it, you'd say, well, they're going to have a fixture pile up at some point. They'll have one eye on promotion here. They need to get back in the Championship. You know, you mentioned they're not in the Premier League for a while. If you're Wigan right now, if I'm a Wigan supporter right now, I'm thinking we've got to go up.
Yeah, and also, I bet you it's a laugh going their games at the minute, because like you said, they're buzzing. And you know, they'd be right off for it with a Blackburn. And also, from the players' point of view, I mean, we're talking there about, you know, do they not want to fix your pilot and whatnot. The players' point of view would be thinking, if I do all right here, I'm getting a move and I'm getting a new mortgage. Because that's how it works at that level. And all the families would be down and whatnot. And if they do well, they'd be getting a new contract, even if you don't get a move. So I think all those things are relevant at this level.
Okay, 5:30, we are in a situation where, as I said before, Swansea, who have not played a game since December 11th, are playing up against Southampton. Should be an interesting one.
A pleasure as ever to be joined by Guido Clewellyn to talk about Swansea City, who find themselves languishing, I say, in 17th in the Championship. There's just been a run of games postponed because of the reasons why games are getting postponed at the minute. That means that the one thing that Swansea do have is games in hand. I mean, the Championship is a mess of sides, having played between 22 and 26 games. Swansea are at the 22 end of that spectrum. But Guido, it's not been the season Swansea supporters would have hoped for so far?
Probably not, but it's probably been close to the kind of season that we would have expected. I mean, we got off to, you know, the most unideal start, shall we say. Losing your manager 2 weeks before the season starts, appointing the new one a week before the season starts, leaving all your transfer activity until the final day or two of the transfer window, well, much of it anyway. It was always going to be a tricky little transition, and it's just the club's been turned up. Well, the playing side of things has been turned upside down really since Steve Cooper left. The playing style's changed, and it's been up and down. I think it's fair to say we've had good spells, we've had bad spells, and we're still, I think, trying to find our way in the new way of doing things.
The last time you played, you came up against Steve Cooper. You came up against his side, Nottingham Forest, on the 11th of December, and got beat 4-1. Was that a particularly bad tempered affair, given the way in which Cooper had left, or was it a sad affair? I'm just sort of intrigued, literally, from the idea of the match going support, the atmosphere that day.
It's such a long time ago. I think I'll have to look at the history books to remember. But I mean, there was a lot of discussion beforehand about what kind of welcome Steve Cooper would get. Would he get, you know, a good one, a bad one? He got absolutely no reaction, basically, which kind of sums it up. I think Cooper's time at Swansea had come to a natural end. I think, despite the difficulties caused by him leaving so soon before the start of the season, I think there was a general feeling that he would find it difficult to replicate the success he'd had in the previous two seasons without the kind of the likes of Andre Ayew around the place, and maybe finding it more difficult to bring in players on loan the way we had before. So I think there was a general feeling when he left that it was probably the best thing for Cooper and probably the best thing for the club in the end, despite the fact, weirdly, that he'd taken us to a playoff final the previous season. There was a sense that it was now or never with the playoff final. Either we were going to go up with Cooper or it was never going to be that good again. But yeah, I mean, he came down though, and he's clearly, you know, very aware of all our weaknesses because he exposed them brutally, I would say. The defensive weaknesses, which we've had all season really, were in full view. And when the first kind of postponement came after that match, there was definitely a feeling like, okay, you know, this isn't the worst time in the world to have a little break to work on a few things.
Yep. You mentioned there those weaknesses. You mentioned also the idea of the squad sort of coming to a natural end, the idea of the continued sort of progression. It's worth saying, I think this is the first season where Swansea haven't been in a position to have that parachute payment money. Is that right, Guido?
Yes, that is.
So having not got back up in those sort of that three-season period with the parachute payment money, has that led inevitably to a tightening of the belt, to a reduction in the quality of the squad? Do you feel as though those things are just interrelated? Or do you think that was a curve that Swansea were on regardless?
Do you know what? It's not been the financial side of things. Actually, hasn't been as much of a hit. We'd been cutting down gradually every season anyway, as the parachute payments have basically kept us on a kind of level footing. They hadn't given us any kind of major benefit over the other teams, other than the fact that it enabled us to pay a player like Andre Ayew £80,000 a week, which we wouldn't have done ideally, but we were saddled with him and it didn't cripple the club financially. But actually, we have spent a little bit of money in a league where there's very little money being spent these days. We brought in Joel Pirou for about £1 million, and he's been one of the best strikers in the Championship this season. We brought in Olivier Ncham, who was at Celtic. He's been very good when he's been fit. Couple of other players who've really done well. Our business, actually, the likes of Flynn Downs, the players that we've brought in have done really, really well, actually. It's probably been one of our best transfer windows, but we have lost quite a few players as well. And there's just been this very big turnaround, basically, and adapting to a new style as well. It's just been a little bit of a chaotic period, really.
What are the hopes then for Saturday's game? Because it's almost, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful to the competition or to Southampton, but there's a little way in which this is almost like a pre-season friendly for Swansea. I you know, it's one that from a distance has a look of you never know, and I suspect Southampton will make some changes, but they haven't got a massive squad to make changes with. You know, you can do it, you never know, but ultimately these footballers haven't played a competitive game since the 11th of December. The one thing you would suspect is it'll be a pretty strong Swansea side, therefore, that can play. There's no reason to rest anyone, but they haven't all got 90 minutes in their legs, have they?
No, and that's the thing. I think we're usually in the third round of the FA Cup, you'd see us making changes, even if we're playing against a Premier League team. I mean, we played against Man City last season and made quite a few changes when we played against them. But this time around, I think we have to play our strongest available 11, just because we haven't played since the 11th of December. It's just us, Luton, Bristol Rovers and Port Vale in the top four divisions who haven't played since the 11th of December. So that's an incredibly long time that they've just been sitting around basically not getting any kind of competitive football. So I think we have to use this game as a chance to get everybody back up to speed, to prepare for the league game. And if we can, you know, it's difficult to know what to expect. We could come out really sluggish and get an absolute hammering from Southampton, or we could be totally refreshed and, you know, we'll have worked on all the weaknesses that we saw in the previous games and we'll be a new side. We absolutely have no idea, but whatever happens, it'll be a good preparation for the league game against Huddersfield in the following week.
Yeah,
That was me. I should have done the thing where normally I'd say,
"I'm trying to save you."
I was aware that I've gone the start. You see, Paul, I've gone, and here's Gito Clewellyn, and then we go from there. But don't worry about it at all. Maybe I'll keep the spin in. I'll let him choose. anyway, that was Gito. It was great. Well, in we're back. It is Hull versus Everton, also at 5:30 p.m. And Mike Kearney, Hull versus Everton, the Blues in turmoil. This does not feel like a thing. Like, I almost feel as though the most Everton thing they can possibly do is actually win this round and then go out next round to a straightforward side at home.
This is a game where Rafa Benitez as Everton cannot win. They literally can figuratively win the game, but I just don't think they can win, because think of it as us. If we've been that long without a trophy and we're saying for all these years, just have a go at the cups. Just let's have a go at the cups and see where we go in the league. And they're now in a place where there's a lot being made of the Luca Dean thing, hasn't there? And he's got his man now at left back. He's signed him. It looks like that's going to be all brushed under and away when Luca Dean sold. Signed Nathan Patterson the other day, didn't he? Are they going to be playing this weekend? Potentially, potentially debuts for the new lads at full backs. But otherwise, really, if they win, it's another round, another draw. Let's see what happens in the draw. If they lose, God, I wouldn't want to be Rafa Benitez. And it's a place where it gets on top of you really quickly, Everton. When it starts going wrongly, Roberto Martinez will tell him. Ronald Koeman will tell him. And he'll know himself how it's been over the past couple of weeks. You know, surprisingly getting that point at Chelsea the other week in the league, which was, you know, it took everyone by surprise, probably none more so than the Blues themselves. But this just doesn't feel, I wouldn't be thanking the FA or anyone if I'm Rafa Benitez at the minute for this game. It's just, they've got to win it, because if they don't, it's awful. And if they do, you know, it's potentially shoving awful down the road for what might come.
Jake, Hull City have been knocked by the news that three key first team players will be missing for the weekend's FA Cup tie against Everton. The strike duo of Wilkes and McGuinness, also the Australian international Callum Elder, the sideline through injury. They will miss the visit, it says here, of Rafa Benitez's Toffees. None of this matters. Hull need to realise they exist solely in Everton's own psychodrama. They have very little agency. Everton have a lot of agency. How do you think Everton will use it, for good or for ill?
It's always ill, isn't it, with the Blue Nose.
Eventually,
yeah,
ill.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I'm looking at this sort of Shakespearean saga with Rafa going there. I'm just wondering, you know, how does it play out? Is it better if they win and they go on some form of run, weirdly, in the FA Cup? Because I wouldn't put it past Rafa, because he's a cup manager at the end of the day, isn't he? And I've got mates, sort of connections from school, who, you know, when they were going on them runs with Moisey, were getting like tattoos on the calves and all that at the time. So you'd love nothing more than Rafa tattooed done a blue noses calf, would you, when they got relegated and won an FA Cup?
Don't think they're going to go that far. Yeah. Let's just keep our heads. It just feels it does. It's understood. This is a tie of the round sort of potential upset. You can understand why it's going to be on the telly poll. There's all the obvious little markers. The one thing I would say is Hull are not in good shape. We said before about sides feeling good about games. Hull sit 1-5. 19th in the championship, only won 6 league games all season, only scored 20 goals all season. This is not a good side Everton are facing.
No, it's not, but you can literally throw that out the window in most cases. I mean, I remember going to Leicester when Leicester were bottom of the championship, hadn't won a game all season. We were 2-0 up, lost 3-2 to a guy who scored a hat-trick and I've never heard of him since. And this is how the FA Cup can be. I call it the supernatural cup in that respect, because in some cases, like, things that look pretty straightforward don't always happen that way. That's not a nice tie to have. I think the fact that it's on at that time as well is almost like, what can be the most peak upset we can get in this round or potential? And I think that everyone's looking at that. And I've been in a position yourselves and you think it's going to be straightforward and it just sort of unfolds and it's horrible. I mean one bright spot for Everton lately has been, if there can be, is Anthony Gordon seems to have hit a bit of form, which is good for to see a young player. I know he's your rivals and stuff, but
no,
good to see him breaking through, a local lad as well, I do believe. But other than that, there isn't a lot really to spin. I'm trying, Everton fans, if you're out there, but not much really.
I think the only thing for certain in this game, like, it literally could go anyway, but the only thing for certain is that Rafa played 3 right backs. that is it, isn't it?
Holgate, Coleman and the new lads.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Is it true that Graham Sharp could be playing as well?
I love, in the Dickensian story of Everton issues, I love the introduction of a new character, the Graham Sharp news. Put a spring in my step yesterday.
Sharpie gone in, has he?
He's gone in as a non-exec director to hold them to account.
Oh, he's right. He's going to sort it out then, isn't he?
Yeah. We're 3 months away from listening to Blue saying, and what's Graham Sharp doing? Yeah. That's what I want to know.
Can I just ask one question as Liverpool fans? Do you think if you just took away the fact that, you know, Rafa had anything to do with Liverpool and he was just like a guy who managed all the other clubs but not Liverpool, would he be getting the set, or are Everton fans just waiting for it to go wrong so they can turn on him?
I think the problem with this is, I would argue it has gone wrong. Like, I think there's loads of issues, and there's been issues around fitness, but the playing dire stuff, I think people can accept playing dire stuff if you're getting results, but they're not getting results. So I don't think they should ever have appointed him, and in part for this reason. Like, if it does go a bit wrong, it could go very wrong, and I think that's where they've ended up. And I think that the part of his red shiteness sort of doesn't help in this instance. But they don't. The problem you've got here is that when you have, and they have had bad injuries, and things just aren't quite going for you, what you need to feel is that you can get a backs against the wall thing, especially if you're a club and a team like Everton. The fact that he's there makes that really, really hard for them. So it's dead interesting. For instance, the night when it felt like it could all go really badly wrong was the home game against Arsenal, and Goodison Park as a force galvanised itself into, no, we're not standing for this, and they went and got the result. And I just think that all of that is, I think they can get themselves up for one or two of them, but not in a way they could have done in the past, and not in a way, for instance, if Ferguson had exactly the same results, if they just put Big Dunk in charge, then I think that they could have, you know, they could have worked through it a little bit more. So I think it is a bit of that, but I mostly just think, I don't think Rafa's having a good campaign. I think it looked like he was at the start, but I just don't think, I think he decided he had one way of playing. He hooked his hat, he gambled everything on Calvert-Lewin, which is sort of perfectly reasonable, and then he's had no Calvert-Lewin for 3 months.
I say it because it just feels a bit like Mourinho at Spurs, where, you know, there was a lot of us, including me, that almost like secretly wanted him to fail, because I just, you know, I know it sounds really, really poor, and I didn't really say it much in public, and I tried to back him, but it's just something that left a bad taste in my mouth about him being at Spurs, and I don't know whether Everton might be perversely thinking the same.
It's almost like a sort of guerrilla PR campaign from Everton. It's like, we were just going to hook Everton bad on Rafa because everything else going on behind the scenes is absolutely awful. It's almost like Bill Kenwright acting like season 3 Logan Roy on Succession, in terms of decisions he's making. It's just a bit nuts, aren't they?
And they also have this paradox of, you know, they want good football play, but when people like Roberto Martinez And who's the other guy that was at Watford? Silva. They played.
Forgot about him.
Yeah, they kind of played the sort of sexy football type thing. They weren't happy.
But they had money to spend. Rafa's had nothing.
But then they had Rafa and they had Sam Allardyce and all these other players. Allardyce, do you remember that? and all these other characters. So they kind of need someone in the middle of those two, really. And it seems that they can't seem to find that.
You can't. Mike, the one that seems the most bankery of all the games, you know, City with their issues going to Swindon, the fact, very fact that they're going away from home, Liverpool with issues up against Shrewsbury, Liverpool though at home, the one that feels of all of these games the most home bankery is Chelsea versus Chesterfield. And it is magic of the FA Cup territory, I think, from a Chesterfield point of view. But I mean, I don't mean that like I'm expecting them to get anything at all from Stamford Bridge. What I mean that is that there's a group of footballers there who are about to get the best day of their lives playing footy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they'll be. It's at Chelsea as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's one. All the Chesterfield lot will be ticking that off, won't they? We've been and played in, you know, in Stamford Bridge there. I would imagine that it's you know, state of the art in terms of what they will be used to. The dressing rooms will be different size, completely different to what they're used to, and it'll be everything like that they're taking off. And the Chesterfield fans will be able to say that they've been to a Premier League grounds and see the team play. And ideally, you want to go and see and be involved in the game, don't you? And they may be for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or however long they can last at 0-0. But yeah, I think you're right. It's pretty much nailed on to be a banker, no matter what team Chelsea can put out. And I think they went through their COVID a little bit more, like Timo Werner's still out with complications of it, I think, or not getting
he got back for the game against Spurs.
He come on last night,
yeah but I Conte mean, and
Conte wouldn't be fit against
and Silva are both got COVID.
I just think no matter what, like Chelsea have got 20 odd players out on loan, haven't they? They could have called all them back and played them really and still gone through. And you know, they'll have Lukaku. There'll be a storyline somewhere over the weekend, won't there, of the comeback for Lukaku. He'll probably score, you'd imagine. Maybe not start, but he'll come off the bench and score, you would think. A bit more sharpness and minutes in all the legs. You still got the likes of Ziyech as well, haven't you? He played last night,
I think, that
Wednesday as well.
Chesterfield, the Spirites, remember they had that great cup run, Jonathan Howard hitting the bar, nearly got to the final.
You got
wasn't
the
it?
Semis, yeah.
You got to the semi and they scored the goal, which was over the
great
line.
Set of coaches.
Yeah.
Great set of coaches.
Yeah. So, you know, they've got history. And also, another thing to give them hope, you know, only a couple of years, was it Bradford went to Stamford Bridge and won 4-2, was it, or something crazy
that
like
was
that?
That was a very Mourinho-esque Chelsea, wasn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, again, it can happen. But it does look like a banker, of course.
It does indeed. All right then, next one to begin to work through. On our FA Cup whirligig of all of these games that are all worthy looking at, is slipping over to the 2 p.m. on Sunday. Charlton Norwich has the feeling of a potential surprise. Keep your eye open on that one. Norwich are, even with all the things, Paul, they are very much in the capacity of football clubs that could do without a cup run. I think if you are Norwich, you do just need to be able to focus on one thing.
Yeah, but do they? I mean, even if they focus on that one thing, they're not staying.
Well, they've been focusing on it, so it'll be going very well.
Yeah, so we might as well try and do a Wigan and concentrate on that. But yeah, I don't fancy the chances much at Charlton. I think Charlton have got a really good young side, good young manager in Johnny Jackson. That I don't know if you saw just before the lockdown, not the lockdown, just before Christmas, should I say, they had a game where the fans could get in for a certain amount. Charlton Happy Day or whatever, and they got like 30,000 fans there or something crazy like
good
that.
Community club, they always have
unbelievable. Yeah. I love that. Do you know what I mean? Like trying to get the community involved and stuff. And I think that if it's a sort of game that will pack out the Valley, actually, and I think that they'll be looking forward to try and turn them over.
Yeah, I remember when they were at Wembley a couple of years ago with Lee Bowyer, and I think they took about 35,000, 40,000 to that, didn't they?
I actually went to a Charlton final, a full members' cup final at Wembley in the 80s against Blackburn, and Charlton lost 3-2. So, yeah, they have got quite a following.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
So the two that we've got Paul in to talk about, Spurs versus Morecambe and Liverpool versus Shrewsbury. Spurs versus Morecambe should be relatively straightforward, you'd have thought. Manager's fascinating, Paul, to be honest with you. You feel as though he's certainly framing himself as one man who's on a constant voyage of discovery with his footballers and what they're about to an extent. I've been, you know, he's very much, he is a win now type of character, but I think he's accepted that winning now with this crop of players could prove to be somewhat difficult for a variety of reasons. It was interesting he even ruled out the idea we solve all this in the transfer market. Not to say that Spurs might not do some business, but it suggested to me that first and foremost, in a way that has never really come a vibe that's come off him in the past, he feels like he might be strangely in it for the long haul. I'm not saying this necessarily, I'm not saying this is a negative at all, I'm not even entirely saying it there was a positive either. He just seems to have looked around, seen what he's got. I thought he was interesting after the game there against Chelsea last night, the way in which it plays out. Spurs are not out, it's two legs. But he isn't quite the full Conte as we've seen in the past, and that might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, I think he's... I did say in a last time I was here that the 2 months before the transfer window was definitely going to be a period of assessment and to try and accumulate as many points as you could during that assessment period. You know, we're quite lucky that I think only Man City probably collected more points than us in that period. So to do that while assessing the squad is actually not a bad thing to do, with some really good performances at home. You know, we could have scored a plethora of goals, albeit against a weakened Liverpool, you know, in that thrilling game. Let's not talk about refereeing decisions. Don't forget the Champions League final, by the way.
We won, Paul.
Biggest game in our history. I think I like what he's doing and I trust what he's doing, and a bit, like, because I had that thing about Mourinho, it was almost like I didn't... Looking back at some of the things he was saying, we're actually right about some of the players and characters. And I think this is an important thing. I think that we've got a good quality squad in terms of ability, but there's a lot lacking in mentality. Here's a perfect example. Someone like Tunguy Ndombele, who, for me, has got some of the best skills I've ever seen as a player. I described him as this, Moussa Dembele without a heart. You know, Moussa Dembele was an unbelievable skill star, but the passion and the ferocity that he went in with his tackles, he didn't walk about. You know, every time Ndombele gets tackled, I call him Peter Griffin. You don't even see Family Guy when Peter Griffin limps about with that. And that's all he seems to do. And that shows the lack of, you know, he doesn't just get up and get on with it. It's this, and Conte's not going to suffer players like that. You know, he wants players that are going to be 110% in it. You know, I can count on you. That's the kind of...
Do you think that's what Mourinho was doing with him in the park? Do you think he was just trying to kick that out of him?
Yeah, probably.
Very odd, that,
but you
it?
Can see, doesn't he, you know, he's going to go on to be a wonderful player somewhere, you know, someone who's going to accommodate him and build a team around him. A bit like, he's our version of Paul Pogba. You know, got all the ability in the world, but he needs that protection around him or a freedom to kind of do what he wants. And, you know, Ndombele kind of like symptomatic was Tottenham as a squad. Lots of ability, but not enough heart and passion to go with it. And you saw that in the first half against Chelsea. There just wasn't that, you know, that drive and passion to succeed. So in a long way round going to talk about this game, I think that you'll see, you know, a lot of squad players, you know, a lot of players that are trying to come back from injury, like Brian Hill, Lo Celso, these sort of players that haven't had minutes. Dele Alli,
do you think these are the lads he needs to see next, if you sort of see what I mean? Like, I'm sure you've seen bits in training, they've seen videos, but is this almost like the next phase? Is the lads who, there's still 4 or 5, I think Alli is still really interesting to him in a generalised sort of sense as to what he thinks he can or can't get, but...
Yeah, but he didn't feature at all yesterday, and that was with injuries and, you know, resting players, and that was a bit of a concern. I'd be concerned if I was Dele Alli, especially the way he played against Liverpool. I thought, okay, this guy's still got something in him. That's the best I've seen him play for a while. But then he played against Southampton and he kind of, you know, it wasn't the best of performances, but he seemed to be the one that kind of took the brunt. I don't know if he's given special instructions and ignored them. I think where our issue is at the moment is more about the fullbacks. You know, I said it before, Conte's whole successful teams have been built around having great wing backs, you know, that can defend and attack and that, more importantly, can cross. We've got none of those. Yeah. None of our fullbacks at the moment can cross for Toffee, and we need that looked at, and I think he will address that. I heard we've been linked with Tarek Lamptey, would be a great signing for me. I've always admired him. But there needs to be more. Morecambe are going to come there, they're going to have a go, but you would expect the Spurs will have too much for them.
You'd expect Spurs to have too much, Mike. The thing is, with It's funny sort of watching Spurs from the outside. I watched the second half against Chelsea. I didn't watch the first. I watched the second, and I thought, you know, you've certainly got to see the fact that they'd had a half-time talking to. I think it's fair to say, off the way in which the commentators were talking about the way the first half had gone, you got to see that Chelsea could keep them at arm's length. What you'd also maybe got to see was that it wouldn't actually take loads in terms of new arrivals to get a side that could be scrapping it out well and truly for top four. It'll take a bit more to sort of go to the next phase on that, but then that's a complex beast in and of itself. But I don't see any reason, for instance, why Man United, Arsenal, West Ham are markedly better than Tottenham, and I think it's actually easier for Tottenham to become markedly better than them.
No, it's very strange, isn't it? For Spurs, they have the season where they make the Champions League final, you know, as Paul sort of mentioned before, tongue-in-cheek about the refereeing and stuff like that, but how do you go from a side that is capable of that, and by the way, coming back from a 2-0 deficit in the semi-final of that year's Champions League against a really good team in their ground, to then get through and make the final and stuff. They've sort of really whimpered away from where they could and probably should be. And as you say, like the West Ham's and them sort of teams, like, you know, Leicester, top four for 2 years, pretty much fell out of it last day of the season on both seasons, won an FA Cup. Tottenham are, I don't know, they feel as if they should be a lot higher than where they are, and it just feels like it's not quite, I don't know, maybe you'd be able to tell us more, Paul, like mismanaged in a way, really. It's just that it's just been a couple of bad decisions. And
yeah, I mean, the key of it was when Pochettino got to the Champions League final, we said, right, here's the time, we have to make some difficult decisions in terms of getting rid of certain players that have served us well, we need to replenish the squad, we need to build again. This is the famous one, you know, we've got a great stadium, it's like having a great house and having shit furniture in it. And that comment from then should have been heeded by Daniel Levy. It wasn't. He completely ignored it until we sacked Mourinho and got Conte in charge and said, I admit, you know, we haven't done enough on the playing side.
So he's just not listened to the manager at the time, has he?
No.
He's more took offence to him saying that and saying, well,
we'll do it our way, we'll be frugal, you know, Pochettino was a victim of his own success because he managed to compete with the top without really spending much money. He didn't spend money for like three transfer windows. That's kind of unheard of. And was still keeping us in the top four.
Yeah.
So Daniel Levy thought to himself, oh, hang on, what's this guy telling me?
I was literally just about to say something similar. I think for Levy, that whole new stadium, new era, it was being a big club thing, it felt like the start of something, when actually, when you look back, it was actually the end of something.
Yeah,
because, you know, there was a journey with Pochettino and probably a little bit before that as well, as in terms of they were building towards that new stadium. There's something to sell to players. They were also very solid, by the way. Alderweireld, Vertonghen, these were up. These were centre-half.
These were
centre-halves and defenders that any team in the league at the time would have had through the middle, Dembele. And that just whimpered away, and they got a little bit old. And Pochettino's probably right. Now's the time to rebuild, whereas Levy probably thought, no, now's the time to go again. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Well, I think that, you know, I'm not being negative, I think moving forward we've got the best manager that we could possibly have, really, to make these changes. And there's going to be a lot of difficult decisions, but, you know, I trust in the process.
He feels like a hybrid between Pochettino and Mourinho for me. Yeah, that's probably what he's needs.
The summer basically hinges on what happens with Kane, doesn't it? You'd imagine.
Not really, because I feel that I think Kane's on board now because of Conte.
I think the best thing you could do is sell him. I honestly do.
I said that last season, and, you know, you replace him with Vlahovic, who's 21 years old, on the up. You know, I don't think you're going to miss it much, or miss him much. But if it alternatively, if he stays, I think the key for me is getting a full pre-season under Conte. I think there's not really much you can do fitness-wise, as we were talking about earlier, mid-season, in terms of getting the players up to the speed and the intensity that he wants. He gets a full pre-season, even with the squad that he's got now, I think you'd see a big difference.
Liverpool then against Shrewsbury is shrouded, Jake, in we just don't know. I would have thought, given the fact that I can count to seven, that there's every chance that you end up with Jurgen Klopp back on the sideline with Alisson, Firmino, Matip, Fabinho, Van Dijk available from a Liverpool point of view. it could be a really quite strange team, I think, in that it really could be as simple as there'll be a couple of young lads he wouldn't mind blooding in an ideal world or having a little bit of a look at. He could end up with a situation where I don't think this was ever one that would have had a big red circle and Virgil van Dijk around it, but it may be that he's one of only two fit centre-halves. It could be a side which simultaneously manages to combine Liverpool A and Liverpool C, or maybe even Liverpool D all at once.
Yeah, I mean, there's logistics side of it, isn't it? Obviously, the training ground's been shut. So who do they play? And what condition are they in? And, you know, have they kind of been in a bubble somewhere else, in a hotel somewhere, and all these kind of things coming into play? You know, all this kind of boring stuff, really. And you can't second-guess this as fans. And you shouldn't want to either. I remember a few years ago when Liverpool went on tour, I think, to Australia, and to sell a load of tickets, they just played, like, the first 11, but then with Carragher and Gerrard playing. And I can almost see a scenario like that happening, where we might just pull a couple of the legends back. if need be, but honestly, my guess is as good as anyone, but you know, your guess is as good as mine. But I think I'm very much expecting if the game does go ahead, it'll probably be under 18s.
But don't they all train at the same place now?
And so. The academy have just a couple of days ago at a similar time had Burnley, who they were scheduled to play Friday night, called off.
They might have called Burnley off though, because they think they might need to play some of those lads Sunday.
Potentially. I mean, it's not been announced why it's being called off. You would probably think that that's the case, because, I mean, there's probably less of a fixture pile-up in the academy-level game.
I mean, I could do a game centre-half with Nat Phillips.
But I was about to say, but you'd be doing it with Virgil, which, by the way, you know, we were all volunteering for. But my point is, you know, because we know it, Virgil's had it.
Yeah.
So we can't have it again. No. So Virgil, you know, this is my point. So
but Virgil will be playing up front, won't he?
Well, he might be up front alongside Firmino. And then this is why it is so. It is, and we're not going to know until he does the press conference.
Yeah, but can he have it again or can he not?
But he had it like literally just 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like a 6 month one.
Oh, right. Okay.
He was ruled out of a game because he had COVID.
That was the Spurs game, actually, wasn't it? Or was it?
No. We've had Christmas since then. I forgot. You know.
Here's a question for you, Liverpool fans. If the game does, let's take it as if it is going ahead, choose me one player.
What's the Spurs game, by the way? What's the Spurs game?
Oh, right. Choose one player that you would like to see given a run out. It could be a young player, could be a player who hasn't played for a long time. Who would you like to see out there?
Tyler Morton.
Okay. Yeah. Is that a lad that played in midfield against Spurs?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so, because I think, you know, Curtis becomes a proper Liverpool player, I would say, on the back of his goal against Everton. I think that was kind of the decision for him to become the new Lallana, or the new sort of the number 8 midfielder or whatever. And I think they've got high hopes for Morton. And basically, I think if he carries on playing the way that he is, he probably saves us £60 million in getting a Fabinho number 2.
I agree in terms of his talent. I think the biggest thing we could do with him doing is literally becoming a bigger human. I'd like Firmino to play and to get, because he's in a really weird position now for me, you know, where he's just not played very much football for a month and a half, and we're going to need him big time with the two lads who've gone away. So we need him to not just be in decent nick, not just to be running around a little bit, but actually ready to lead Liverpool's attack for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so I think that starts now against Shrewsbury, and he shouldn't, again, unless he's got some sort of after effect from it. Again, he's one who's missed with COVID, so he should be fit in the very recent past. So he should be fit, and that's the one for me.
It talks a lot about rhythm, doesn't he, Klopp? And that's the one that makes the most sense, really. Get him 90 minutes, just let him play the 90 minutes out of his legs. Really, it can be a bit rusty against a team lower down the leagues. And fair enough, it might be a bit of a patchwork team, but he's bound to have 90 minutes in his legs against them, and some better players that he mightn't have been expecting to play with playing with him. But I mean, Kate Gordon's one that's sort of coming through at the moment, who's what people would probably class as last season's Harvey Elliott, making a League Cup performance this year, similar to when Harvey ever played against MK Dons. He's exciting. We got him from Derby, didn't we? And I think the likes of that level of academy player will probably be thinking, well, yeah, I can't wait. It's at Anfield. I just can't wait to get involved. And I think you'll have a couple of players. It'll be probably like 60-40 in terms of first team. And
I tend to go down the train of thought that he will be a mixture of A to D's, you know.
Yeah.
I honestly do. I think that you're going to definitely have a couple of A's in there just for experience. I think Milner got injured, didn't he, the other day? He would have been the perfect person to kind of like put around the youngsters. But I think it'll be something along the lines of that, you know, some old heads in there, and then, you know,
it'll be like that Everton game, I think, where Lallana's captain would be similar towards that, but there's plenty of kids. I think Nat Phillips might play his first game there, but I think we've all missed the obvious one. In terms of our picks, it's Lawrence Karius, isn't it?
Might be on the bench with a bit of luck. Still expect Liverpool to go through.
Yeah, you've got to, haven't you?
Got to say, yeah. When you're on Anfield, that podcast.
I mean, we literally beat them a couple of seasons ago with the kids, didn't we? I know to be able to do that, we had to then draw with them with a better team. But I'd just be massively surprised, even if it's a sort of mad patchwork quilt team. I'd be very surprised them coming to Anfield and being able to probably score three goals maybe to win the game, and I would fully expect us to go through.
Take 1-0 rush, wouldn't you? Now,
absolutely.
We don't know where we are with COVID in terms of our team at the moment, though, do we? So that's another thing to think about. Like, we, Robertson's available again because it's not. Is he available again?
He's available again. Yeah.
So he'd probably like 90 minutes, wouldn't he? But we don't know where we are. We just have to wait and see what the team is.
We will indeed. Or see what the press conference is and see who does it. Thank you very much indeed to Mike Kearney, who might do the press conference. Jake Nolan and Paul Dehaney, to Gito and to Dan. It's been a pleasure. Sports Social Podcast Network.